welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is apologetics and campus outreach. And I have with me a special guest. My special guest is Brendan Helms. Let me tell you about Brendan. Brendan has an undergraduate degree from Appalachia State in history. He's studying at Southern Evangelical Seminary, and he's looking to get a degree in biblical studies. And he's also co-founder of a group called Ratio Christi. And welcome to the show, Brendan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Anything I left out?
I think that about covers it.
Now, I know you told me you were married.
I am married. I've been married for a year and a half. My wife, Chelsea. She's also, we dated in high school. Both went to Appalachian. Got married June 16th, a year and a half ago.
Okay. Well, Brendan, let's just give the audience just a brief understanding of who Brendan is. Give us your testimony briefly.
Well, I grew up in a Christian family, got saved at a young age. And for the most part of my life, I would say I was a strong Christian. When I got into high school, I started running track and cross country, became very successful at the sport. Went on to Appalachian on a track and cross country scholarship, had a good deal of success at the level. The downside of that, though, was my pride. And interestingly enough, my sophomore year at Appalachian, I actually got hurt, had to redshirt a year, and was offered to come back and complete my last year of eligibility as a fifth year senior. So I took that opportunity. Unfortunately, I basically pulled my hamstring. Senior year, the only reason I stayed around was to run. And so I'm sitting there thinking, you know, why on earth am I here? You know, I'm here to run, can't run, my leg's, you know, blown out, can't do anything. You know, I'm hobbling around, you know, running, trying to race, because I mean, in 6 months I'm done. And I'm sitting thinking, you know, basically talking to God, thinking, why am I here? And more or less getting angry with God. And finally, I had a conversation with my dad, and he said, you know, you need to get rid of the attitude. You got to get rid of it. So I was finally like, okay, you know, maybe I'm here for another reason. Coincidentally, that semester, I got in touch with a good friend of mine now, Randy Hardman, and Randy is the other co-founder of Ratio Christi. So I look at it all in all that, you know, what I saw was an injury that had devastated what my, you know, love of life was running, turned out to, you know, put me in the place where I am now, where I am running Ratio Christi and a student at SES. So it's kind of the way God chooses to work and to humble us at times is definitely humbling, we'll say.
I know that firsthand. Now, I mentioned the topic is apologetics and campus outreach. For those who have never heard of apologetics, who've been living on a rock and obviously never seen this show before, what is apologetics?
Apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia, meaning to give a defense. So in this category, we're talking about defending the historic Christian faith.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Ratio Christi. I mentioned Ratio Christi. Tell us about Ratio Christi. What is Ratio Christi and how did it get started?
Ratio Christi got started, like I said, I met a good friend of mine now, Randy Hardman. Randy was at Appalachian with me. He's actually still at Appalachian, and he actually runs our branch of Ratio Christi at Appalachian State University. And Randy started an informal apologetics club that I got involved with, and as I was finishing up at Appalachian, we started talking, like, you know, this is something that has been great here at Appalachian. I wonder if this is something that could be taken to other campuses. And basically it started, Randy and I, we met at Conrad's Coffee House in Boone, North Carolina, for many times over a summer, just trying to figure out how can we possibly take what we've started here and take it to another campus. And as two guys, you know, we were definitely both younger, I really had no idea how to do that. I said, you know what, you know, I'm starting at SES in the upcoming year. Let me call down there and see if they have any ideas. So I call down there and I get in touch with another good friend of mine now, Simon Brace, who's the director of team at Southern Evangelical Seminary. And through that, Ratio Christi got brought under the umbrella of Southern Evangelical Seminary. We are a ministry of SES. So basically, Ratio Christi, you know, we are a national organization that establishes apologetic clubs at secular institutions. You know, we're operating at UNCC here in Charlotte, Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina. Most recently, we were approved to operate at Texas A&M, one of the largest universities in the country. We're working on getting established at Ohio State University, which is the largest university in the country. Also, NC State, we're working on currently, Florida State, several other universities in the North Carolina system as well.
Yeah, I really, really love to hear that. I mean, I'm really excited about that because the college campus is the battleground.
Absolutely.
Which is actually basically going to get to my next question. I mean, so what needs are you trying to address on these college campuses?
Well, you know, statistics tell us that anywhere from 50 to 75% of Christian evangelical college students who enter secular institutions will, by the end of their college career, have walked away from the church.
Right.
That statistic is, you know, mind-boggling. When I often speak to college groups, I ask everybody to stand up, and then to play a joke on them, I ask that 75% of them sit down. Now, most people stand around, what do you mean 75% of us? But I mean, the idea that, you know, of four college students that enter, three are going to walk away. And that's you know, a mind-boggling figure, that many young Christians are walking away from the faith. And a large part of that is because of the intellectual skepticism they're going to face on the college campuses.
Right.
I believe that statistics indicate that college professors are 70% more likely to be atheist than the average individual. Hmm. Now, not to say that the professors, you know, are not smart people. They are. The problem is that the professors come to the table with a worldview that is not conducive to the Christian worldview, and that worldview often distorts their perception.
Yeah. Yeah, and in a lot of cases, they are actually openly hostile.
Absolutely.
To the Christian worldview.
Very true. There are, for example, we have at UNCC, James Tabor, the head of the religious department, wrote a book called The Jesus Dynasty, which in the book, Tabor argues that the Jesus of faith is nothing of the Jesus of history. Of course, he dismisses a priori that Jesus could have even risen from the dead. Of course, he dismisses that Jesus was God, and believes that when Jesus died, Jesus started a lineage of kings through his ancestors. So,
what does he base that on?
he comes to the table with the notion that anything besides the miraculous is more likely.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes back to. UNC Chapel Hill, we have Dr. Bart Ehrman, who will actually be debating at SES on April 2nd, you know, who says that, you know, we can't trust the Bible. The Bible is riddled with error. So whatever the original text of Scripture was, we can't possibly know what that is today.
Yeah. And that is why this is so important, because, like you were saying, so many lose their faith. Because a lot of people, before they go to college, they were never prepared for
right.
college. They were never prepared for the skepticism.
True.
They had a belief that was based on something that someone told them that they never really sought out for themselves. They never really understood the evidences for it. So when they're challenged, they don't know how to respond. They don't know that there are such things as evidences for the Christian faith.
Oh, exactly.
So when they are confronted with this professor, who was a person of standing, who's a person that they respect, and that person challenges them or criticizes them, then it is very easy to lose what faith that you had, especially if it wasn't on firm ground.
True. I'm reminded of my sister. She's a sophomore at Appalachian. She actually just had a New Testament class. And part of the class assignment was you had to have an online learning community that you had to make a weekly submission on. And one of the students in the class said he's so glad that he took this class because he finally realized that all of the religious beliefs he had growing up were just completely false. And he was so glad to just be done away with that now. And yeah, you wish. And I, my sister tells me this. I'm like, you know, if he only knew of the evidence for Christianity. But of course, you know, most professors are not going to present that side of the issue.
Yeah, so what type of responses are you getting in these universities?
Well, we've had, I guess, the most interesting response we've had thus far is we had Dr. Frank Turek of crossexamined.org speak back in September at UNCC, and the Q&A session was very revealing. You see that a lot of the skepticism the students assume that there is no evidence for Christianity. And when they hear a scholar speak on Christianity and provide evidence, they're more or less baffled and don't know how to respond. We also had Norman Geisler speak in the fall on the historical reliability of the New Testament. And one of the students in the audience stood up and said, you know, I was expecting just so much more from this lecture. Your presentation was full of countless fallacies, going on and on, and never addressed any, never criticized any argument, but just said, you know, your PowerPoint was full of fallacies going on and on. And very graciously, Dr. Geisler told him to, he would appreciate to send him an email showing him the errors. I kind of wish he would have said, well, you're actually the one committing the fallacy because my argument still stands even if I do have errors in my PowerPoint. But, you know, he let the guy
off the hook
on that one. So, but I mean, I think at least initially, the college students who come from the skeptical background aren't exactly sure what to make of it. And we're aware that that's going to happen. But our goal is through those big campus events like that is to, you know, just give the students a little taste that, okay, maybe Christianity isn't as unreasonable as I thought. And then through our weekly meetings, hopefully draw these students in and to show them over a time period that Christianity truly is the most reasonable worldview.
So what type of things do you have? You say you have weekly events?
Well, we have weekly meetings where I'll speak. We'll bring in various speakers. We've had many speakers from Southern Evangelical Seminary come in and speak weekly. But then we also have big campus-wide events that try to attract a larger crowd. And that's where especially we try to reach the skeptical community on campus. And maybe even those students that can't make it out on a weekly basis, you know, with class schedules, maybe they can't come out on the night we meet, but they can make it to a big event like that. And the reason we feel that this is necessary is because apologetics in the university for so long has just been event-oriented. Right. You know, Robbie Zacharias, a William Lane Craig, a Norman Geisler comes in and they more or less blow the students away.
Right.
You know, the Christians get fired up, man, they're excited. The skeptics, they're sitting there like, oh, okay, well, maybe there is something to it. But then they go right back to the skeptical classroom where their beliefs are just, you know, further endorsed. So, you know, we want to take those events that fire up the Christians and, you know, put a little bit of doubt to the skeptics. And then through our weekly meetings, we look at that we're more or less the ground troops that come in and clean up what the aerial bombers came in and did. I do believe we are having success with it.
So who are these meetings for? I mean, who attend them? Are they believers? Are they unbelievers?
For the most part, we do have, I would say right now, it is Christians. We do have people who we had, I know recently, students who at least said they were Christians, but from my standpoint, judging from comments they made, their beliefs would not align with the true Christian worldview. So I think that's another thing we're here to do is to show, you know, to help Christians truly understand what Christianity is. Because I think a lot of people come in, from, you know, maybe they get saved at a young age or maybe they even get saved, you know, maybe recently. And they don't truly understand what Christianity truly is. So that's another thing we look at that we're trying to, you know, help with.
And what you're doing is so important. I remember I was speaking at a conference a year or two ago, and I was speaking on biblical inerrancy. And at the end of the talk, this young kid came up to me. I guess he was in high school. And he just had this look on his face like he was just been beaten down. And he said, you know, how do you deal with people who just tell you that the Bible just isn't true and it's just full of mythology? So how do you deal with that? And it was obvious this kid has been, you know, been going through the ringer. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, well, that simply isn't true. And I started giving him evidences. I was talking about how prophecy proves, you know, prophecy alone. I mean, there's so many lines of evidence to prove the Bible is the Word of God. But from prophecy where, you know, when we look at like the book of Daniel and how all of Western history was basically foretold, when we look at the book of Isaiah and we see how Isaiah was predicting the children of Israel would go into captivity, or Judah go into captivity, and that it would come back out in 70 years in the name of the king, who would be the king to bring them out. I mean, all of these things, you know, just a couple hundred prophecies just on Jesus. I mean, in the book of Daniel, you can see actually the year that Jesus died. You can actually calculate that. And as I was telling him this stuff, you could see his countenance change. Mm-hmm. You could see something happen inside of him. I mean, he was sort of slouched over, and he actually started to stand up straight, because now he knew that he had hope, mm-hmm. because now he knew that there was evidence that he wasn't just believing in some fairy tale.
Right.
And he was encouraged, and he was strengthened. And I never forgot that look on that guy's face.
Well, and I think another big problem we run into is, and this is, from my standpoint, one of the big failing points of the modern church, is that we emphasize that Christianity is based on faith,
yeah.
but I think so often churches don't give a proper perspective of what faith is. And, I think the church I go to, I work in a college Sunday school class, and that's one of the big things we have to deal with a lot of our students is we have series where we're talking theology and, you know, trying to demonstrate the truths of the Trinity or demonstrating the truths of the resurrection. You'll be like, well, you know, this is just, and they'll tell you, this is just based on faith.
Yeah,
and you're like, well, you know, that's not what faith is, at least from the historic Christian perspective. You know, I mean, you look at the writings of Aquinas and Augustine. They're not basing their beliefs on this blind leap into darkness. You know, it's a rational faith. And I think that's another stumbling point that a lot of Christians come into, is that even those Christians that hold true to the Christian faith while in college, they do it almost irrationally, because it's the fact that they're just, you know, well, my professor has the better evidence, but I'm a Christian and I have faith.
Yeah, like somehow they are just opposed to one another.
Right.
And that's what happens to me when people talk to me about, you know, different religions, where they say, well, how can you say one religion is true and another religion false? How can you possibly, how dare you
right.
say such a thing? You know, how can you say that Islam is wrong? And one of the things I bring up all the time is I say, well, look, both can't be true. It's impossible.
Right.
I said, let's look at the resurrection. Either Jesus rose from the dead or he did not rise from the dead. One of those religions say that he did. One of those religions say that he did not. One of them, at least on that point, must be true, and one of them must be false. So you can test the foundations of those religions. When those religions are based upon historical facts, you can test those historical facts just like you could test historical facts right. about anything. So you can determine what religion is false, at least on certain points.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So I'm really excited about what you're doing. So when you go to these, when you talk to students who are in these secular universities and they're dealing with issues there, what are some of the topics or the issues that they deal with or they struggle with the most?
I look at this, for me, I think it comes back to two issues. Issue one is, that's not what my professor says. That's issue number one. That's the big one we get. Well, that's not what my professor says. Okay, well, that doesn't mean your professor's right. The other one, and this is something that when I first started with Ratio Christianity, something I was surprised to see, that a lot of the objections are not intellectual. Many of the objections are emotional. They come into college, they either hit with the skepticism, and they give up their beliefs. But it's not that when you have discussions with them, it's not that their mind was changed by some philosophical argument. It was more that, you know, things like, you know, how could God allow, you know, this to happen to me? Well, that's not, you know, necessarily that's a problem you have. That's not necessarily a credible argument you're bringing to the table. Or things, I'm trying to think of some of the more commons I've heard recently. I'm drawing a blank on some of the examples, but quite often it's an emotional objection to Christianity, not an intellectual. And that was something I was honestly surprised to see. I had, you know, several friends in college who were atheists, and the people I was, you know, close to that were atheists in that group, most of it was intellectual challenges. So I have been surprised to see that quite often it is not the intellectual. It is oftentimes emotional.
Now, do you ever get a dialogue with any of the professors?
Thus far, I have not. Now, when I was a student at Appalachian, yes. I had dialogue with one professor, but it wasn't anything just terrible. I have heard, for example, at our group up at Appalachian State, we have had students that I know for a fact have dialogue with professors. And I think oftentimes the professors almost don't know what to make of it, that it's, they're not used to being challenged. Most of the time, even the Christians in the audience basically just almost like they sit there and take the beating. And we're putting Christians out there who are, you know, basically tired of taking the beating. And they're, you know, willing to stand up and fight back. Obviously not physically, of course, but, you know, they're challenging the assumptions of the professors. And I think a lot of the professors, you know, they're not necessarily prepared for it. I know, for example, with my, going back to this class my sister was in, the professor, she had to do an assignment on 1 Corinthians, and she called me up and said, I have to do an assignment on 1 Corinthians. I said, oh, great. I said, all you need to do is go to 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul gives his argument for the resurrection, and tell the professor that, you know, Bart Ehrman at UNCC says that 1 Corinthians was absolutely written by Paul. And so 1 Corinthians was written by Paul, who, you know, Ehrman agrees that 1 Corinthians was written by Paul. He agrees that Ehrman was a witness to this. Or excuse me, he believes Ehrman, that Paul, yeah. Ehrman agrees that Paul's a witness to this. So you just get up and say that 1 Corinthians 15 says that Jesus rose from the dead. And then you sit back down. So she does that. The professor at the end of class, he gave her a B on the paper, or a B on the presentation. And at the end of it, he said, from now on, I need you guys to leave your faith at the door. And that's what I need. You need to leave your faith at the door. This is a scholarly religious class. So she came back and told me that. I said, well, the next time you see the guy, ask him the question that if I'm supposed to leave my faith at the door, am I not having faith that you're going to at least going to come to class and teach us? And just see what the guy says. So she pulled the guy aside one and she asked him that, you know, you said we're supposed to leave our faith at the door. What do you mean by that? Because I'm at least having faith that you're going to arrive here and teach us. He goes, that's not what I mean. And she goes, well, what do you mean? And the guy really couldn't give her an answer at that point. So I think oftentimes, you know, some professors, you know, you are going to have professors that, you know, are more, not that they're incapable of debating back, but a lot of times they're almost not prepared because they're so yeah. used to just being able to say whatever they want and go unchallenged.
Yeah, and the 1 Corinthians passage is really interesting because it has nothing to do with faith. Because, for instance, I believe that the Bible is the Word of God. Everything in the Bible is the Word of God. However, from you can make an argument from a simply historical point of view.
Right.
You can make the argument that this is a historical document, whether you believe it or not, that it was written by Paul, and Paul talks about the resurrection as if it actually really happened. So we can make the argument that Paul clearly believed that the resurrection
right.
happened, because in 1 Corinthians, he's talking about 500 witnesses.
Sure.
Why is Paul writing to a church about 500 witnesses that never happened? Why is he talking about people seeing Jesus rise from the dead if it never happened? So that has nothing to do with faith. This is actually a case for evidence.
Right.
Not faith.
Absolutely.
So he was, I think he was just completely off the mark there.
Right. No, I agreed.
But have you had other instances where the students have actually gone into the classroom and have challenged the professor, and the professor was like, what are you talking about?
I guess going back again to my, at Appalachian, I know my sister had a guy in the class who was involved with Ratchet Christie, who he did challenge the professor on many of, you know, the statements he made. And, you know, he would often, you know, basically come back to, well, that's a good point. But he would basically go to, you know, it was like almost his trump card was miracles can't happen, which, you know, the student in the class was, you know, he was a freshman, so he, you know, definitely didn't have much, you know, philosophy training. Though, you know, he basically is, you know, committing a fallacy there. But that was, you know, what he went back to. The professor knew he couldn't argue on historical grounds, even though it was a history class. So he, you know, went to that. And that was basically what he would go to any time the student would challenge him, and he couldn't. Well, miracles can't happen.
What are some of your short-term and long-term goals for Ratchet Christian?
Short-term, we're definitely very excited about our recent prospects at local universities. We've actually just got word very recently that we have a contact that's wanting to set something up at UNC Chapel Hill. We have a meeting. I'll be in a meeting next Saturday to get things working up at NC State. So short term, that's our, you know, one of our big goals is to, you know, begin to work You know, because right now we essentially have UNCC, Appalachian, Texas A&M to begin to expand out. Long term, to be operating, you know, nationwide, to where it's not, you know, simply, you know, basically something in the Southeast. You know, we've had some contacts outside of the Southeast, but nothing too serious yet. But we feel like, you know, once we can get established, I guess more in the home base area, we have a little more credibility. We can really begin to work our way out.
So how can people find out more about the organization?
Well, more information, they can go to our website, which is www.ratiochristi.com. And since Ratio Christi is in Latin, I'll spell it. That's ratiochristi.org. So they can go to our website to get more information, and they can. We have on there, on the website, a form they can fill out for various ways that they might want to be involved, and then we will get back in touch with them.
Okay. Well, Brendan, you're not going to believe this, but we have basically come to the end of the show. So I would like to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having
Brendan
me.
Brendan Helms with me talking about apologetics and campus outreach. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.